is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. Well, I'm really honored today. I have a very, very important guest, and it's such an honor to have him on Joy on Paper. Dr. Augustus White III is a trailblazer. He is such an amazing person, and I've had a lot of amazing people on this program, but I don't know that I've had anyone quite so trailblazing. I mean, this man is an amazing, amazing person. He was the first African-American medical student at Stanford, the first black surgical resident at Yale, the first black professor of surgery at Yale, and the first black chief of service at a Harvard teaching hospital. Well, he's a first among men, I can tell you that. And it's an honor to welcome you to the program, Dr. White.
Dear Patsy, thank you so much for that kind, inspiring introduction. I hope I can live up to that, but I do appreciate it very much, and I look forward to our discussion and our interview.
Well, I do too, because as you know, this is funny. It's so lucky that it is January 29th, because I do not talk to people of color in February. I have made it a policy. When I started this program, I had no idea about the publishing world, or I didn't know any writers, I didn't know any authors, I knew no publicists, and it took me a few years before I realized that I was only getting books from people of color and by people of color for February. And when I realized that, I said, no, I don't want to do it. I will have people of color on in January and March and April and May, every other month. But I won't do it in February, because it just continues this whole cycle that we are looking at color. And a great author is a great author every month of the year.
Interesting thoughts. Interesting perspective. These are important times, you know, to have as many points of view and approaches to our challenges around issues of race and ethnicity. And I think any time I encounter someone who's trying to do the right thing, I appreciate that and I enjoy that. So I congratulate you on your thoughtfulness.
Well, you know, it is important. We have to stop this cycle. It's just a cycle of. For me, the idea of color comes back to something my mother said to me. When I grew up in northern Michigan, in a remote farm area of northern Michigan, there were no black people. In those days, there were no people of color, any color. I don't think there was a Chinese person up there. So we didn't see anybody of color. We were all blonde and blue-eyed. And we moved to the city when I was in second grade. And I remember a few days after we arrived in the city, I took my first bus ride, because I'd never been on a bus with my mother. And, of course, there were black people. It's Detroit. There's black people, you know. And I'm looking at them, and, you know, and I sort of like, you know, I must have said something. She just turned to me and she said, you know, God just loves people from Africa, because he made them have dark skin so they wouldn't get sunburned like you do when you go outside in the sun. So it means God really, really loves them. And after that, it really, from that point on, actually, for many years, I thought, I want to be a little bit black, you know, because I get sunburned like in an instant. I go outside and, you know, and I live in Florida. Now I can't go out to the beach. So just that simple thing, how a mother can change an attitude. And,
yes,
you know, isn't it remarkable?
It is. It is indeed. Yes. I have nice thoughts. I did my internship at University of Michigan Medical Center, and I have fond memories of Michigan, and University of Michigan in particular.
Oh, yeah.
Is an institution I have great respect for, and they've been on the vanguard, and they've done some good things around these issues of color and race and social justice. I'm very proud to have been there.
Well, I was lucky. I got to play in halftime at football in the football games. I was in the marching band. So so I appreciate how much fun it must have been for you in Michigan.
Oh yeah, yeah, it's great. It's great. It's great university. Yeah. So you're a musician.
Well, I was.
great.
But of course, and you were a great football player.
Well, I had some. Yeah, I enjoyed it. I wouldn't say I was great, but I enjoyed it. It meant a lot to me. It's a great game, and we're happy to have. I don't know if you noticed in our book, but one of our interviewees is Heather. I'm blocking on her last name now, but she's a female Division I quarterback coach in football and at Brown. She's working there as one of the first women to be in that particular sport. Heather Marini is her name.
Well, your book, Overcoming, Lessons in Triumphing Over Adversity and the Power of Our Common Humanity. Overcoming, this is such an important word. We need to start overcoming all of these prejudices and all of this nonsense, and also overcoming our fears, because your book certainly will, I think, help to inspire people to look at things in a different way.
Well, I sure hope so. I also hope it will help people. You know, while we can't push a button and get rid of all these social issues and racial issues tomorrow, and it's going to take some time and a lot of hard work. Meanwhile, we want to enhance our resilience so that our quality of life and our ability to cope with the racism and all the other problems, all the other isms, but all the other problems that we face in life as human beings, we need to call on our resilience from time to time. And when I say our common humanity, therein lies some distinct resources for building resilience. And that's what we hope people will take from the book, looking at the various specific examples of our interviewees, but also we try to point out what some of the mechanisms of their resilience and components of their resilience may be, so that they can mimic those things and improve their quality of life. So we'll see how it works, but I think there's some wonderful examples anyway in the book of people who've overcome tremendous adversity.
And of course, being an orthopedic surgeon, you've seen so many people who were traumatized and had major injuries, and so you've lived through that, where people have overcome their horrendous injuries, including the fact that you were in Vietnam and worked there with so many of our soldiers who were wounded. It takes an enormous amount of sort of self-discipline and courage to overcome these things, but we can. And these examples that you have in the book, I think, really will help people.
Well, I think so. I think so. And, you know, there's so many different examples. There's so many different iterations. And there are so many different people demonstrating these things. I think that some readers will benefit from some of the interviewees, and other readers, other of the interviewees. And we, you know, it's not organized to try to address everyone. But I think as people look through the book, they will see things that resonate either with their own experience or their experience with others that they have mentored or tried to help. And we also try to emphasize the theme of mentoring as one of the numerous mechanisms to help to enhance our resilience when we need to be resilient.
Well, you were lucky in your youth. You had some great mentors there who helped you along. Something certainly spurred you to become the first of everything, a real trailblazer.
Well, I was lucky. I'm quick to say that, and I say it sincerely. I had good luck in that I did encounter people who wanted to be helpful, what I call them right-minded people, who just wanted to help out because they thought it was the right thing to do. And so I followed assiduously their recommendations and their advice and things that they did and achieved, and I followed them as examples to the extent that I could. And I'm very grateful for that. Speaking of months and so forth, it's also mentoring month now, as well as African-American History Month.
Well, there are many, many ways that people can become involved. And I think by reading your book, it will open their eyes and for people to say, oh, well, what can I do? Now, of course, now we're in this pandemic situation where we can't go to the normal places that we would, like, you know, go to help people. So now but there are still places online and ways to get involved.
Yes, yes, many, many, many ways, and so many things to choose from. And again, I emphasize the variety of people employing a variety of mechanisms to constitute and address their resilience. And I look forward to hearing from people who say, oh, yes, I read about Heather Marini, and I was coaching a neighborhood football team, and I read about her, and I felt emboldened and encouraged and enthusiastic, etc. And many other people there, as you'll see, a transgender person who's able to develop a good quality of life around those challenges, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
The examples are great, and everyone has, it's like reading books. There will come a time that one particular book will touch your heart and will change, has the ability to change you. And in this case, you have these very touching stories. I know that one of the ones that I was particularly, it really sort of it broke my heart in a way, reading about Mangak Bol, the Lost Boys of Sudan. This entire thing, the Sudan, what's happened in the Sudan and what's happened to these boys is something that at one point in my life, I almost landed up moving to Sudan for a job. And,
oh, really?
Yes. And when I look back on it now, I mean, I'm glad I didn't, but because it's so horrendous that it breaks your heart. And then somebody like this, who was in this horrible, horrible life, and now he's, you know, a changed person, a different person. It really makes you feel that there is hope in this world.
Yes, yes. Well, that's my wife's favorite character in the book. She really. And a couple of people asked that question, you know, but I certainly agree. And one of my co-authors knew him very well, David Chanoff, who's a distinguished writer who's helped me work on another of my books. I don't know if you're familiar with it. It's called Seeing Patients.
Yes, I've looked at
you
that.
You are, yeah.
Yeah.
Unconscious bias in healthcare. And that's, you know, naturally being in medicine, you try to understand, you know, part of your life's work is to understand as much about people as you can. And that's what led me to being sensitized to some of these important aspects of resilience and how to encourage people to address that.
Well, each of the stories, I think, is compelling. The whole premise of everyone trying to, we have to change. It's crazy. You know, we've gone through this pandemic year. We see how things can change so quickly that we can, there has to be something within us, within, you know, our own hearts that can change if we feel that we have these prejudices, or that we don't live up to what we would want to. There's time to change. There's time to become a better person. And reading your book and listening, you know, and your life, just your life is so inspiring that you've done all of these things, that you persevered, because it must not have been easy. Every step of the way, you were facing challenges of people, you know, going to be the first black here, the first black. I mean, this was difficult.
Yeah. Well, it was inspiring. It was enriching, and you know, you feel like if you're doing a little bit of good. I mean, I don't have any delusions about, you know, what I did do or didn't do. All I know was that I did the best thing I could in the circumstance that I was in, and I was able to have the help of other people, and I exercised what my mom taught me early on. I don't know where she got it, but treat all people with respect, you know, no matter who they are and what the situation is. Make sure nobody could ever accuse you of being disrespectful. And just in that process, you know, I ran across people who helped me, who reached out to me a little bit and nudged something in one direction. I mean, my residency program, I had the good fortune of having a mentor at Case Western Reserve, and I was there in the summer, and I worked in his lab, and he decided to help me to get a residency. Actually, a little thing, you mentioned race. I was a student at Stanford, and I wrote a letter to the chief of orthopedics at Case Western, said I'm going to be in Cleveland in the summer. My mom lives there now, and is there any chance I can do research there? And he said, yes, write to Professor Curtis. And he was in the department, and let him know. So I wrote Professor Curtis and said, I'm a student at Stanford, a third-year student. I want to be an orthopedic surgeon. Can I work is there a lab I can work in the summer? And So the chief gave my letter to Dr. Curtis. Well, if he'd given it to someone else, things might have been different. Who knows? But anyway, I didn't say I'm an African-American orthopedic surgeon. I said I'm an orthopedic surgeon, which was true, but I didn't say I'm African-American. And I sort of realized when I was going to meet Dr. Curtis for the first time, I realized that what was going to happen, and I said, oh, my goodness, what's going to happen, you know? So I went in, and I said, I'm going to do the flickering eye test. I said, I'm going to shake hands with him. I'm going to look him in his eye, and if his eyes flicker, I'm going to know I'm in trouble. If they don't, I guess I'm going to be okay. So they didn't flicker, and not only did they not flicker, but he said, look, he said, as he knew I was applying for residency, he said, let me see if I can help you with residency. I'm going to suggest some places you go where I know the chief, and I know that they'll be interested in evaluating you in a fair manner. So anyway, long story short, he included in a list of about six chiefs, included the chief at Yale. And I went there, and he knew who was coming. He knew, you know, that I was African American and so forth. So that was a stroke of luck, though, you know, and it worked out in my favor, and it encourages us all to try to be. We feel better when we do the right thing, you know.
Yeah, you really do, and I hope that people will be inspired by your book and by your life. Even that you worked in a leprosarium. I thought, you know, like as if you didn't do enough in your life. Just briefly mention that, because people still there are. It's funny, you know, people don't understand there's still leprosy in this world and in places where they're not getting the right care. But you worked for a little bit of time in a leprosarium.
Yes, that was a lot. Again, a lot of people helped me. I mean, there were a lot of people. And at the evacuation hospital, it's where I worked, where I was assigned as a combat surgeon to do care of wounded soldiers. And there were other people, the nurses, who had volunteered to be in Vietnam to be helpful, and some of the corpsmen and some of the other surgeons, anesthesiologists. As I was going to a leper colony, as things evolved, due to them volunteering to help me to bring instruments, we actually ended up being able to organize to do some surgery at the leprosarium. And when things were not busy, of course, if we were needed at the hospital, we were there. But when there were times when there might be one or two days or 3 days when no new wounded soldiers came in. Anyway, long story short, leprosy is a horrible, horrible disease. It takes away your sensation. People have to be taught not to use their hands as tools, not to try to nail with their hands. They have to be taught those things over time. That's just one example, because they have no sensation. And they also have motor weakness. Anyway,
did a wonderful... I mean, everything you've done, you've dedicated your life to medicine and to helping people, and now, of course, to writing books that open people's eyes as to prejudice in hospitals and how all of this has to end. But the important thing is that you are an example to people that life can be absolutely wonderful if you are a wonderful person. You're living a life of joy, and you certainly have done it. I'm just so honored. As I said, I've had a lot of people on my program, but Dr. Augustus White, you are truly, truly amazing.
Well, you're very generous. You're very kind. I try to do the right thing. I had a lot of help. And it's a joy, you know, that one thing leads to another, and if it's working well, it inspires you and it guides you, also guides you as to how to make things happen. So I appreciate your recognition of that. And as I said, I hope that this book will help people. You know, one of the things, you obviously female, and one of the things women in medicine, you know, suffer tremendous problems with microaggressions and interactions with people who are not respecting them adequately. And I'm hoping and thinking, and I feel confident that a lot of the lessons in this book will give them the resilience to be able to cope and adjust to these problems, which are very, very difficult. You know, it's hard to decide how to deal with some of these microaggressions that...
I know.
Yeah, I have to tell you about that.
I worked at Mount Zion Hospital in San Francisco when I was young. So,
oh, you did?
Yeah,
okay.
So I know all about microaggressions, Doctor. Anyway, Dr. Augustus White, you are truly a fantastic human being and a treasure for all of us. And I just want to tell everyone, get this book. It's called Overcoming: Lessons in Triumphing Over Adversity and the Power of Our Common Humanity. And just thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper today.
Well, thank you. And it's available at Amazon. You can order it there now. And it's going to be published February 9th.
Okay.
And thank you for inviting me. Thank you for your kind remarks, and thank you for an enjoyable interview.
Well, thank you. And I'll mention it again on my program during February. I will promote the book during the month, but I don't interview people during the month, because otherwise that's what publishers and publicists will send me. I'll only get people of color in February, and I don't want that. I want people of color all year round.
Fair enough.
Okay.
Fair enough.
Great.
Okay. All the best.
Okay. Thank you so much. Bye-bye
okay.
now.
Bye. Bye.
Oh, what a marvelous man. He accomplished so much. Now, did you listen to him? He's in his 90s. This guy is in his 90s. And look at this. He's writing books and he's doing so much. He's an amazing human being. And you can be an amazing human being too. All you have to do is try. Yeah, that's it. And now, look, normally I would go to commercials, but I'm going to go straight. It's my caller. I have my next caller on, and I want to talk to her because I love this book. I'm going to talk to her first, and we'll talk about commercials after I finish talking to her. But I don't know. I can't stop turning the pages of this book. Frances May's new book is called Always Italy, and it is beautiful. It is National Geographic book. Of course, whenever I have a Nat Geo book, I'm so thrilled. And Frances Mays, thank you for joining me today on Joy on Paper.
Well, I'm so happy to be here. Thank you.
Oh, wow. Well, I think everybody probably has seen the movie based on one of your books, Under the Tuscan Sun. It's, you know, I'll tell you one thing. I think I've, in this pandemic-y thing, I've watched it 3 times this year.
Because that's wonderful.
It's one of the nicest movies.
Such a surprise that movie became kind of a cult favorite. It's owned all over the world. It's just amazing.
Well, I can tell you, I get so tired of looking, you know, at all those little squares on the television when you're looking for something to watch, and there's square after square after square, and there's nothing good to watch. And then you get Under the Tuscan Sun, and you know if you click on that, you're going to have a great time. You're going to be in Italy, which, I mean, this is, you know, what can I say? My first honeymoon was in Italy, and we did Italy from north to south. We did the Appian Way. We went every place in Italy, all the way across them. We went to Naples. We did the Appian Way. We went over to Brindisi and took a ferry to Greece. So,
how fabulous. What a trip.
It was quite a trip. And I will tell you, that trip was in a white Cadillac.
Oh, wow.
We brought a white Cadillac from America. We shipped it to Bremen and drove it down from Bremen, and then we did all of Italy in this white Cadillac. So you can imagine how much fun we had. Everywhere we went, every village.
Magical.
It was. And we didn't have your book, but we did find a lot of the, I'm going through the book, the new book, Always Italy is exactly how I feel. And it is such a beautiful book. And I want people to really, this book is perfect for a Valentine's Day gift to yourself and to people that you know. Because just to sit with this book, literally, I've been sitting with it for hours. Like, I can't stop turning the pages. It's so filled with wonderful, wonderful suggestions. Beautiful pictures, of course, anything that Nat Geo does. But the way you've laid out the book is really great.
Oh, thank you. I'm so glad you're enjoying it. I had such a good time writing it. I've almost never had as much fun writing a book before. I got to go to all 24 regions of Italy. Oh. It sounds like you hit quite a few of them, too.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, just I've been in Italy so long, but there were still places I hadn't seen, and it was a treat to be able to go. I have a co-author, and she was traveling, too, so between us, we amassed an incredible amount of information.
How do you pronounce her name? How do you pronounce it? It's Ondine Cohen?
Ondine Cohen. She lives in Tuscany. She's just over the valley from me. She lives in Pienza. And when National Geographic asked me to write this book, I knew that covering all of Italy was going to be at least a 2-year project. So I asked them if I could bring on board a co-author, because it was just a tremendous amount of detail and traveling. So we had a great collaboration. We had different interests, and they seemed to complement each other quite well. She's she's very interested in all the outdoor sports, and she has a child, so she brought in traveling with children, and I just learned so much by writing this book, and my interest was really extended by having such a good co-author.
Well, I do love the way it's laid out with suggestions, and one of the things is, of course, sports. Suggestions on where to find, you know, interesting things for people who are interested in sports, people who are interested in different subjects, and
that's what we wanted to do, to, you know, give a full-rounded picture of Italy, not just the cultural history, but contemporary Italy. What's going on now? The artisan cheese makers out in the wilds making their perfect mozzarella, you know, design studios. all kinds of things that are going on right now. So we really wanted a cultural context that included the present. And that, of course, is a lot of outdoor activities now, and such a good balance with going to 100 museums and 100 restaurants, you know, to get out in a boat in the Venetian Lagoon or to take a ski lift up in the Dolomites and hike down, things like that. It's so much fun.
And all of the sort of divisions that you have, like for people who want the spiritual experience, for people who want an art experience, for, you know, this is actually all the time that we traveled in Europe, I did this automatically for my husband because I was interested in, you know, like history. I was interested in the sort of my interest was medieval history particularly. And, of course, that wasn't something big on his thing, but I knew if I wanted to go somewhere, if I said, well, there happens to be a battlefield here where, you know, during World War II, well, I could get him to go anywhere. So he was going, and, of course, if I told him there's a place where we can get free samples of cheese, we'd go there really fast.
Oh, there's something for everyone in Italy. There's no doubt about that. There's layers and layers of history there, but somehow people seem to be so at home in time. They have time to do something spontaneous, to stay out late on a Wednesday night. There's just a pace of life in Italy that I really respond to. And we tried to capture that as well, the joy of meeting people as you travel. This is a lot about, you know, suggestions of how place to arrive there and take a long walk, read the writers from that area, but also go in shops and say, where do you go for dinner on a special occasion? And that will lead you to an insider experience rather than, you know, something you look up in a guidebook where 20 million people have already been there. So there's a lot of suggestion toward a more inventive kind of travel. For instance, in Rome or Venice, places that are very well visited, we make all these suggestions for things to do around those places and things within those places that you might not know about. Like in Rome, there's an organization where you can hop on the back of an experienced Vespa driver and get a great time zipping through Rome on the back of a Vespa. You feel like you're in a Fellini movie. Or what's the Audrey Hepburn movie? Roman Holiday.
Yes. Oh, that is...
We like adventurous travel, active travel, but there's also a lot in there about archaeology and, you know, things that people really love to go to Italy for that is just amazing. Because I think Italy has more UNESCO World Heritage Sites than any country in the world. So there's so, you know, so much of the patrimony to that you want to see, but I love balancing that with going to get your hair cut in Italy and, you know, getting a manicure, going to church, going to a concert. The day-to-day life there is just so enriching if you add that to your travel.
Oh, and going to the bakeries, going... Oh, the food, the wine, there's so much. And I love all your descriptions of wines. And after that, I was like, oh, I'm heading to the wine store. Beautiful. Really, you had fun. You guys, you had fun doing this book.
Right, our way across Italy, that's for sure. I never knew there were so many varieties of grapes. Every region you go in has umpteen varieties of grapes and, of course, blends. And I think you could never, ever say you were an expert on Italian wine because it's just too vast a story. But we did our best.
And the wonderful thing about Italy, there's so much, there's so many different parts to it. There's a shoreline, there's the mountains, there's the inland areas. You know, the variety is incredible.
And, you know, it's small. It's not any bigger than Arizona, and it still has all these unique kind of separate cultures, separate dialects. The cuisine is different all over the country. It's just packed. I think one of the reasons for that is up until 100 years ago, Italy was divided into little parcels. The Pope controls some, the kings, Bourbon kings, the invaders of various kinds, the dukes and whatever. And people had to stay separate. They couldn't travel. They were stuck where they were, which results in the most diverse country in the world because they developed their own painting style, their own color. Everything's shapes of pasta. I guess that's why there's so many different pastas in the world.
Oh my! you go crazy there. It's just one delight after another. And we mostly ate in small family restaurants. We stayed in sometimes the really, really fancy hotels, but we actually ate in the small places because they were so welcoming. And of course, my husband was wearing a cowboy hat in those days too. So we had the white Cadillac and the cowboy hat. Boy,
well,
oh boy!
Attention.
You can't. The Italian. When we'd walk in a restaurant, the Italian women would go all over him, and it was he'd get such great service. It was wonderful.
Well, that family tradition still exists. It's still very strong, and we love the trattoria just all over the country. We've eaten in so many, but there's also a kind of parallel culinary thing going on now, which is a lot of kids interested in cooking went off to train somewhere else, like Rome or Milan or Switzerland, Paris, wherever. And then in the Italian way, they came home and they have opened restaurants in their hometowns. And so they're bringing back to the trattoria tradition some innovation, but they're still, they're not throwing the baby out with the bathwater.
And they better not throw out their wonderful tomatoes. I could never decide. I love tomatoes, and I could never decide which area had the best tomatoes. Of course, Sicily had unbelievable tomatoes.
Yes, they have that method of drying them out in the sun. That that sense of flavor.
Oh, that's amazing. My goodness. This is like a dream come true that Nat Geo would pay you to do this book. I mean, please, Nat Geo, this is beautiful. Everything from going...
My whole writing career has been so lucky because I've focused so much on Italy that it's just been so much fun to write these books.
And of course, everybody probably now knows you in Italy. Boy, she's coming.
They do around Tuscany, but not anywhere else. I don't say who I am or any. I mean, I don't say I'm a writer or anything when I go in restaurants or hotels because I want to have just the real experience. And it's fun. I travel like anyone else. I'm not well known in the depths of Puglia or Sicily.
Tell us, let's talk about a few of the places, like Gargano.
Oh, you mean in Puglia?
Yeah.
Yes, that's a beautiful area. Big promontory sticking out into the Adriatic. It's dramatic, and the little villages, they look like they're in Greece. There's little stacked sugar cube villages going up the hill. And all these low stone walls that used to be property border walls, but also kept the goats in. The sea is beautiful. I love just not too far below that. I love the town of Monopoli. That's a little bit below that. The whole Gargano area is just peaceful. It's crowded in the summer because there's such great beaches, but I love to go there in the spring and fall. But all of Puglia is a joy. It's one of my very favorite regions and has recently kind of become on the radar of people. You know, way in the south, it has the beautiful town, Lecce. Julia, I should say, sticks out into the sea. It's the heel of the boot. So it's just the whole kind of peninsula of it is surrounded by gorgeous water, turquoise water everywhere, beautiful beaches. But it has the Romanesque architecture tradition. It has an incredible bread-making tradition. The bread there is the best in Italy. It's just a great place to travel because it has so much to offer. All the little villages are so charming with their winding white streets and the blue doors. And the people are just welcoming. If you go in where they're making bread, they just draw you in. They give you samples of bread.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, all over Italy, we found that everybody is incredibly gracious.
We particularly love that area because, as I said, we went down to Brindisi. We took a ferry from Brindisi, but we spent some time in that area, and we ate in so many lovely little places and just became, you know, so involved in sort of that area. And the bread and all of the, well, figs. Oh, I'm trying to think what else we had. It was just incredible.
Lots of the seafood and the pastas there. They specialize in the orecchiette pasta with a bit of greens or beans. And there's a big vegetarian tradition in Puglia. It's kind of interesting, you know, along with all the seafood. It's a great area. I'm so glad I've been able to get to know it pretty well.
Well, I've been to Corsica and Sicily. I never got to Sardinia. But so it looked like you even got a trip to Sardinia. That's pretty good.
Absolutely. We went from tip to toe. And I've been to Sardinia several times, but this time we went to Carlo Forte and made that our base. It's so undiscovered. The whole time I was there, I kept saying to my husband, 20 years from now, this place is going to be overrun. Somebody's going to discover it. But right now, it is just like it's always been. It's a fishing village, fabulous place to sail in the harbor there at Carlo Forte. You can easily get a boat, get a captain to take you. So it was really wonderful.
Well, I think people will really enjoy this book. Right now, they're not traveling. We're not traveling, unfortunately. I don't think anybody's taking a trip to Italy this year.
I was able to go. I went in the fall. We have olive oil business, so we got to go over there and harvest our olive oil. You can go if you own a house, but otherwise, they're waiting until things clear up.
Exactly. But meanwhile, people can get this book and travel, as you said, from the very top of, you know, I love the mountain area. We used to go skiing, of course, up in the mountains in Italy. That was our favorite skiing area. It was less crowded than Switzerland, and we really enjoyed the skiing in northern Italy, and then of course Milan. Every city I just has it's, as you said, its own flavor. And
yeah, I think it's time for you to go back.
I would love to.
You know, I don't know how long it's been since you've been in Milan, but it has transformed. It's such a friendly city now and easy to get around in. It's a wonderful city. They've new museums, the food is, of course, the whole design scene there. There's a lot in our book about Milan.
Well, I think you've done a beautiful book here, and I just want to congratulate you on it. Congratulate you for getting the book deal. This is a dream book deal. And Nat Geo has treated you beautifully because they've done a beautiful production. The book is a hefty book. It's a nice big book. And it'll keep you, everybody, occupied for a long time. And really, I always tell people that the best gift that they can give, instead of actually you know, giving wine or flowers is a Nat Geo book because it's a gift of a lifetime. People will keep this book for years and forever.
Yes.
You never see a Nat Geo book in a garage sale. Never.
No.
You know?
It was a pleasure to work with them because of their extensive connection with photographers, and just to be able to match the text with something appropriate was so exciting to put it together.
Well, the book is called Always Italy, and it's by Frances Mays and Ondine Cohane, and you two have done a great job. As I said, really the individual sections where you tell people, you know, give people ideas of where to eat, where to stay, and the things, the particular subjects that you might be interested in, even fishing. I wish I had had that when we went, because I didn't. I could have kept my husband in Italy another month if I had known about where to take him fishing. This is, I needed that.
Fishing and hunting, the Italians love hunting, and there are lots of boar hunters around where I live.
Well, I can tell you, this book is fantastic. It's a great read, beautifully done, and I just want to thank you. Frances Mays, I will be watching your story again and again. As long as this pandemic is lasting, I'm turning on that, because it's just such a pleasant movie. They did a great job. You must have been very pleased.
Yes, I was. Thank you so much for inviting me. I enjoyed chatting with you.
Well, thank you. Again, Frances Mays, Always Italy. It's available wherever books are sold, and probably at Amazon is the place you're going to go and get it as a gift to yourself and a gift to somebody you love. For Valentine's Day. Thank you so much, Frances.
Thank you. Ciao.
Okay, ciao. Oh, wow. Arrivederci. Okay, that was fantastic. All right, we're going to do a quick book buzz, and then I'm going to come back and say a few words before the end of the program, okay?
Hey everyone, this is Devon Miller, author of the Mr. Tickety Talk Clock Children's Book Series, reporting for Joy on Paper with the latest on children's book buzz. We've done it, guys. We made it to 2021, and I know 2020 has been a stressful year for some, but I'm here to tell you all about a new book that can help relieve some of that stress away. Certified children's yoga and mindfulness educator Margot Harris also has the title of being children's author in her new book, Cookie Doga, a book about yoga, mindfulness, and cookies. Come along with Maria and her mama as they make cookies shaped like yoga and then practice each pose together. It's an interactive book, and it's absolutely gorgeous as it features illustrations done by Stephanie Geyer, and on some pages, you're able to see Maria do yoga poses with her mother. Readers can join in the fun with Maria and her mother by doing some of the yoga poses with them. It's a story full of rhyme, and it's a book for children to explore techniques to help in times of worry or stress through yoga. Teachers and parents, if you read this book during story time, you can also join in on the fun with your students and kids by doing some of these yoga poses that's seen in the book. You can even have fun playing pretend when you do them, like pretending to be a frog or pretending to be soaring in an airplane. What's even better is that at the back of the book, there's a cookie recipe for you to try at home. I don't know about you, but making cookies seems like a delicious treat to eat as we ring in the new year. This is Devon Miller reporting for Joy on Paper. For more book buzz involving children's books and authors, head on over to joyonpaper.com and click Book Buzz with Devon Miller. I think it's about time that I buzz out now.
Okay. That's a great book buzz from Devon Miller. And his book is Mr. Tickety Tock Clock. And those are wonderful books for children. And if you want to give a gift to a hospital like Shriners or St. Jude's or Children's Hospital, send them half a dozen of these wonderful Mr. Tickety Talk Clock books. That's what I did, and I'm going to do it again for Valentine's Day, because the kids need books, and Devon Miller's books are inspiring. He wants more kids to read more, and he's going to have another book buzz in February, which is really exciting that he's joined Joy on Paper. And I've gotten some really nice emails from listeners who have enjoyed his first book buzz of the year and looking forward to the one for February, which we'll have next week, and find out what Devon's going to recommend next month for us. Wow. Anyway, I'm very happy that I had the opportunity to talk to Dr. Augustus White. His book is really something that will touch your heart, and I hope that you'll take a few minutes out of your day to click on to Amazon there and get it. It's called Overcoming. There are a lot of lessons to be learned in this book, and I hope that people start taking these things to heart. I don't know how many more months, weeks, whatever we have of this pandemic-y sort of semi-isolation that we're going into again, but until the vaccine is done. But this is a time to really ponder on where we want to be when we finish this, how we want to share in the joy of life and be good people and just be enjoy life, because we've seen now what happens when you know, people have suffered so much, particularly people who have had losses in 2020, where they couldn't go to the hospital to see family and friends. So all of this has been sort of very heartbreaking. It's been a heartbreaking year, and we hope that 2021 is going to be better. But it's going to be better if you help to make it better and just open your eyes to the problems around us and say, what can I do to solve them? And it is mentoring month. Try to mentor somebody. Try to find a way that you can encourage somebody. Just if you see even a story on television and somebody does something good, you know, send a note. You can just send a note to the television station, say, tell that person that I really appreciate hearing about their story. This is what you have to do. We have to try to be better people. And of course, if you have a story in you, you have to start writing it, because you never know. Look at here, Dr. White is 90 years old and he's writing. And next month in February, I'm going to have Eugenia Levitt West, and she is going to be celebrating her 97th birthday with us. So and she writes thrillers. So you can do it too, because remember what I always tell you. One of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken in an audible book, or if you're very, very lucky, to hear those magic words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be turned into a major motion picture, streaming video, or perhaps a series on the Hallmark Channel. You never know, and you won't unless you start writing. So get to it. It's January. You've got 11 more months. By the end of the year, you can have a book. Yeah. Yep, you can. And meanwhile, say something nice to somebody. I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. Thank you, Ed, for everything. As always, up. And he's saluting me, and I'm saluting him. Everybody, have a wonderful, wonderful weekend. Write a book and read a book. Bye-bye now.